So I was wondering if you might first start off, Mr. Dalio, by telling us a little bit of your own story of how you rose to achieve such success in business and in capitalism.
Well, I was lucky enough to have parents who cared for me and grow up in a lower middle class family. My dad was a jazz musician. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And I went to public school, and I was they took good care of me. I had basic nutrition, and I was able to go to college, and I couldn't afford tuition, so I was able to benefit from a student loan program, and I was able to go out into the job market that was an equal opportunity job market. And I had a particular passion, which I learned early in my life. It was a game to me, the playing of the markets. That game happened to produce, if you're good at the game, you earn a lot of money. And so I evolved. And then I watched that perspective. And I think, you know, those are the basics that allow the American dream. And are the things which we're having problems with. So that was my background.
Right. So you have essentially what is the idyllic story of the realization of the American dream as lived in your life here. And now as founder of Bridgewater, the biggest hedge fund in the world. So you have recently written this 8,000 word essay on LinkedIn about your concerns about the capitalist system at the moment. When did you first start worrying that perhaps, or not perhaps, but that the system is broken and not working as it's supposed to?
I think you have to understand the mentality of the time when I was growing up, you know, and was evolving, because there was this aspirational aspect of equal opportunity and idealism and so on. And so always it's, you know, you could eliminate poverty, you can go to the moon, Kennedy, the aspiration of going to the moon, eliminating poverty, and all of that notion of equal opportunity was something that I was very much attached to and has always been, I've been weaned on that. So as I watch, naturally I study what's going on in all economies and all economies working. If I didn't understand what makes an economy work well, from a global perspective, I would lose money in the game that I'm playing. So I did a lot of understanding and timeless and universal rules of what makes countries successful. And there must be this notion of that the system is fair and it works for the majority of people. So over a period of time, I watched the statistics change. And then, I would say maybe 5 years ago, that became a concern. And then when we had the election, it tapped into a population that made very clear to me that the averages were not capturing it. If you look at average economic statistics, the polarity doesn't exist in the average. So I did a study about 4 years ago to look at what the bottom 60%. I picked the bottom 60% of the population because that's the majority of people. And I looked at what that world looked like. And as a result of that, the statistics became very clear, and I became then very deeply concerned about that. And so it evolved from that over that particular period of time. Because when I compare what makes countries successful, I did a study, what makes countries successful by looking at the statistics across countries and then predicting what the next 10 years' growth rate was, I could see those indicators of economic health and what that would mean, and I saw that over that period of time. So I thought we're now in a situation where I needed to convey that picture, because it's clear that the outcomes are not the outcomes we would want,
right?
I think.
So, Ray Dalio, though, I mean, there are for this discussion about rampant inequality as brought about by unfettered capitalism in the United States has been going on for much longer than the past, you know, four or five years. Wages for average Americans have been stagnating for many decades now. As you know, the percentage of overall wealth in this country that's been funneling its way up to the top has been growing and growing for year upon year. So do you understand why it might fall on some people's ears as slightly cynical to say that now it's time to worry simply because people are finally so fed up, they are expressing that outrage of the inequality at the ballot box?
I think the most important thing is that we all calmly and analytically look at what the situation is, understand the engineering of why does the economic machine working this way to produce what outcome. So I think step number one is, can we agree that the output is not consistent with the goals? That's my first objective. Mm. And I think that it's great that you and I and other people can get on the phone and on your show and talk about such things. But I think that would be a great accomplishment. And I think then the next step is to look at the mechanics as an engineer would look at the economic system, not to make it a fight between one group or another group, but to look at it and say, mechanistically, what is happening? Because mechanistically, if we don't understand mechanistically what's going to happen, I think the real risk is how we deal with each other. That's the big risk. There's enough resources to go around to be able to engineer this in an effective way so that both the pie grows at the same time as it's divided well. I think that capitalists don't know how to divide the pie very well, generally. By and large, people pursue their self-interest, and that's a reality of all social classes and all economic groups. And that at the same time, that socialists, the left, might not know how to make that economic pie grow well. In either case, that they have to work together, we have to work together of all sides on a bipartisan way to recognize that we have a problem, an output that is not consistent with what our goals are, and that we together, in a skillful way, have to re-engineer the system in a way that is going to both increase the size of the pie and divide it well so that most Americans believe that it is fair and it also produces a better economic outcome. So I want to get into really the engineering of how to do that. I think that now the time is right for doing that if everybody doesn't keep fighting with each other. I think it's the issue. The main issue is, can we agree that the output isn't the same? Can we calmly, in a bipartisan way, work together for the overall country? Or are we going to fight with each other and then damage that?
Right. So, and you have written in considerable detail your ideas on, you know, how to re-engineer and fix the system. And I promise you we will get to that. But allow me, if I may, just to explore this idea of how people are thinking and feeling right now when they're hearing the world's wealthiest people finally come around to this view that maybe something's wrong with capitalism. And here's I'll just give you an example from one of our listeners who sent us this message. Keith Arnold says, "So these capitalists who have made their billions and now want the rules changed, they're no better than the robber barons of the Gilded Age. Capitalism, more than any other economic system, has brought wealth and spread it to the four corners of the earth." I'm actually not quite sure what Keith is getting to there, but I suppose an analogy might be that some people look upon this moment as saying, hey, look, here's a group of people that most benefited from a system the way it is, who now say, okay, maybe we ought to engineer it. And they just find it hard to believe that your heart's in the right place.
Well, first of all, they could take or leave anything that I say. I mean, that's fine. The problem is that people actually don't know each other very well. They're not involved. They don't actually have much contact. And if we keep taking such cynical attitudes for each, we're going to be in a position, I think, that's a problem. In my particular case, I happen to grow up in a very modest environment, and I live the American dream. And I think that, by the way, being financially successful is not a bad sign. Mm. In other words, just because you're financially successful, that does not mean that you are against the other person. You might assess, are there people who are successful, who understand how economics works, who have the heart in the right place? Because if
Ray Dalio, I'm so sorry to have to interrupt you. We just have to take a quick break in 10 seconds, but we'll be back in 1 minute. I'm speaking with Ray Dalio, who's co-chief investment officer and founder of Bridgewater Associates, on his ideas on how to evolve capitalism. We'll be right back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking with Ray Dalio. He is co-chief investment officer, co-chairman, and founder of Bridgewater Associates. It's the world's largest hedge fund, and he's written recently about his concerns about American capitalism and why he believes it's not working for the majority of people and how it must evolve. He's the latest, or one of the latest, in a string of the world's wealthiest people who are now talking about capitalism and its discontents. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Ray Dalio, in your extensive LinkedIn article that you wrote, you did write about your ideas or areas in which you think the system needs to be re-engineered, to use your phrase from earlier in the conversation. So tell us about one. How would you go about fixing capitalism to make it work better for most people or all people?
I want to take it at the answer to that question, starting at the higher level, and which it is, how are we going to be with each other? Literally, I think that a certain number of things have to be done at the higher level. And when I mean the higher level, first of all, if you and I and everybody else just talks about this thing, it doesn't produce action. So the most important principle that I have about having an impact is that the people who have their hands on the various levers of power to change things have got to consider this an emergency, that this is a crisis situation, and that if we don't resolve it well, we're going to have a serious situation. Socially, politically, and economically, we can harm each other. So I think the first thing is to make sure that there's leadership at the top. And that doesn't mean necessarily just the president of the United States. It could be the leadership at the state level. It could be at any level. But there has to be a belief that we have an issue that we have to engineer, and that has to be engineered smartly and not and in a bipartisan way. So I think my biggest concern is that there will be fighting and antagonism. So I think it has to be done in a bipartisan way. I'm not saying this is easy, but I think that the smartest people who are skilled, who represents the various communities and understanding, have to go into an engineering exercise. So I would say that the first is to appoint groups who can put together metrics, in other words, indicators of the conditions, and to look at those conditions as measurements of their success, so that they own it. The administration and the other people who are working on it as a commission, and that they have to then go into an engineering exercise in a together way. The reason I'm saying this is I really do believe that we are in risk of hurting each other and hurting economic results if we don't do it that way. Below that level, there are particulars. In other words, I do think that there are ways of dealing with things such as private-public partnerships. There certainly has to be a redistribution of resources. There's no good excuse for education or health care or certain that these have to be, certain basics have to be achieved in resources, and that's going to require a certain amount of money. And how that's done and engineered is really going to be key, because you can adversely affect capital flows in a way. In other words, like states, sometimes as they change a tax rate, it can be a net problem because people move out of the state. Or you could be in a situation where if you change income tax rates, it could change from corporate rates to others. So it has to be done in a skillful way. And those are the main things that have to be done.
Right.
We can get into the particulars that each of us have. But if we're all so attached to our particulars and don't work it out in that holistic way, I think we can get some bad results.
So, you know, I think if you look at it from the perspective of political or policy engineering, the United States political system is very effective at, you know, at changing financial and economic systems in this country. Both we saw it in the wake of the Great Depression, and one could say that we saw it, you know, with deregulation and changes in taxation, you know, starting in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and 90s. So it is possible. The political will just has to be there. I'm just curious.
I think the period that we're in is most analogous to the 1930s, and I think you have to look at the lessons of the 1930s. And I'll say, well, just let me give you a moment on why it's like that. In 1929 to 1932, we had a debt crisis in which interest rates hit zero and central banks had got to print money to buy financial assets. And when they printed that money and bought financial assets, it caused financial asset prices to rise, and that benefited people who had money because they had financial assets, those who didn't. And that created a wealth gap. And with that wealth gap, we had the emergence of populism around the world. Populism of the left, populism of the right. Four countries chose to go from democracies. The democracies chose to go from democracies to autocratic decision-making in that period of great conflict. That period of great conflict, we're going through an analogous period now. In that period also, there was a rising power in the form of Germany and Japan to challenge existing powers. Very analogous. 2008 and 2009, financial crisis. Only other time in history where interest rates had to hit zero. As a result of the hitting zero, central banks printed money, bought financial assets. Those financial assets rose. With that, technology also is replacing people as a result, and it produces that kind of same wealth gap. We have a situation where what we're talking about is a global situation,
right,
not just an American situation.
Right.
And we also have a rising power in China that is also challenging the existing power. We're in a very competitive situation. So if you read that period of time as an analogous period of time as I do, you must be concerned. You must be concerned about the notion of how conflict can tear us apart. I think when we look at principles, our own principles, are we clear on what the principles that bind us together are? I don't think we are. When I say, can we agree that equal opportunity is a goal? Is it controversial? So we have to go back to those basic things of saying, what are the principles that bind us together, and are we operating effectively together? I think that there are political risks for our democracy, and there are social risks, and that some of the things that are binding, that we are almost losing sight of the things that are binding us, the principles that are binding us together.
Well, Ray Dalio, I know I only have a limited amount of time with you, so I've got a couple more specific questions for you, but let me just get at least one call in here. Garrett is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Garrett, you're on the air.
Hi. I just really wanted to thank the speaker for opening by acknowledging that his success was largely due to chance, and that he hasn't contradicted that throughout. And that was a really compelling segue into his discussion about needing to engineer a solution.
Yeah.
Because he acknowledges that right now, we are not in control.
Garrett, thank you so much for your call and for your observation. Let's go to Vaughn, who's calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Vaughn, you're on the air. Vaughn, are you there? Looks like we lost Vaughn. Ray Dalio, I mean, you have a lot of, we're going to put a link to your essay that you've written about this online, because it's quite detailed. And I'm afraid, unfortunately, we don't have time to go into it in a lot of detail. But there are a couple of specific questions that I'd like to ask you to dig in a little bit further. I mean, you talked about how you do believe it's time for a different kind of redistribution of wealth in America. But I'm specifically wondering, for example, with taxation, would you welcome an increase in the capital gains rate?
I just want to be clear that it has to be an engineering exercise where you can't take one rate or another rate because it has implications. You move one thing, you know, the hip bone is connected to the shin bone and all of that. So I believe that there has to be much more resources created and put into things like education, or to cover the same sort of basics that I experienced and that have been shown to raise people in a healthy environment that gives them that sort of equal opportunity. And they are too poor. The bottom 60% of the population is too poor, and it's resource starved. And as a result of that, there have to be taxes that are work in a way to produce, most importantly, equal opportunity. I think that usefulness and productivity of people is connected, is an important thing. You just can't just give them money. You have to give them the opportunity to be useful and productive, because it's better for them psychologically, it's been shown, and it's also better for the economy as a whole, because you create productivity in the same way. But all of these pieces are connected, because if you change one thing, it has consequences. And it's a very delicate exercise in order to do that. So I think I don't want to take one piece and just comment on that one piece without the recognition that the amount that you change something or the way that you change it relative to something else is a complex exercise that really needs to be well engineered.
Point taken. I mean, these are complex systems we're talking about here. But I suppose folks will also say, well, we have to start somewhere. I mean, you called earlier for a comprehensive committee to analyze what a set of solutions might be. But, you know, I guess I'm asking you, would you put your money where your mouth is and raise capital gains rates? Because that's one of the things that's allowed so many hedge fund managers and to become that 0.001% that many people look at as having captured the vast majority of wealth in this country.
I want to be clear that I promise to be objective, and all the parties should be objective in making that. I am giving away a lot of money. We've just made a $100 million commitment to help what are called disengaged, get high school kids through who are dropping out of high school, get them through and get them into jobs in the state of Connecticut in order to do this. I am personally committed to that kind of well-being. And at the same time, I want to be clear that that has to be very well engineered. So you picked one thing, capital gains. No, I wouldn't be objective to capital gains rates if it was done in a balanced way that serves the purpose of raising the effectiveness. I want to both increase the size of the pie and then divide the pie well. And if we're not careful about doing that, I think that today, the top one-tenth of 1% of the population's net worth is equal to the bottom 90% combined. And the bottom is resource-starved and poor. So, yes, I want to deal with that, but I want to deal with it in a comprehensive, coordinated way.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Ray Dalio, my last question for you is, you obviously have a very big voice in the world of finance, and there are other people with similarly big voices who are speaking now. My question is, are you being heard in the halls of power in Washington? Because ultimately, there has to be some sort of connection between all the people the common people at lower levels who've long been calling for reform. Now you're calling for reform. It has to coalesce in policy. So are you being heard?
I believe that I'm being given that there is a curiosity, a desire to face these issues, and there are discussions that are taking place that I'm very pleased about. And at the same time, I do see a lot of partisanship that is existing in, quote, the halls of power. In other words, those in politics. And I think it's important. That's the thing that concerns me. Yes, it's a topic. There's a discussion pertaining, but there still remains a desire to largely politicize this thing. And I'm concerned about that element of it. I won't be politicized. I won't participate in that way. I want it to be analytical in the way that I described in my LinkedIn piece. I hope people will read the LinkedIn piece.
Yeah. And Ray Dalio, I'm being very greedy with your time. So may I, we were supposed to let you go a couple of minutes ago. Can I just ask you one more question?
Of course.
All right. How would you hold your own industry, hedge funds, responsible, or what responsibility do you take, do you believe that industry should take for the excesses of the of capitalism that we've been talking about?
You know, I think it's one of those questions in terms of, I think people don't understand each other very well. And I think if they were to say hedge funds, here's what a hedge fund does. A hedge fund is manages money, or most of the money that we manage are for individual, are for pension funds, endowments, and foundations. So pension funds, endowments, and foundations. And we're an asset management firm, not just a hedge fund firm. And as a result of doing that, if you were to ask the pensioners and you were to ask the our clients who are teachers or firemen and whether we've contributed to their well-being, they would say that they would contribute. They're knowledgeable about how investment managers operate. I think it's almost like saying bankers. You know, you could say that bankers are a problem. Well, there are good bankers and there are bad bankers. And just like there are good car dealers and there are bad car dealers, or there's good any doctors and bad doctors. And I think that to make a generalization about how a particular industry is operating is not a good thing. No, I don't like that sweeping generalization. And I think the same would be, I think, any other group, if I made a sweeping generalization of that they were sort of bad or whatever, would take offense and we'd all be offended at that. So, no, I won't. I think it's it depends how people are operating. And if you look at it, most institutional investors, these pension funds, endowments, and foundations have excellent teams for evaluating how those people are operating. I would say there's a personal risk. When I decided whether I would speak out at this, it's not in my interest to speak out about this. It becomes a high-profile thing. It's a net negative for me personally to speak out about this. I feel deeply attached to this issue, and I feel that a lot of people who are in my position don't speak out about these issues because they don't want to, you know, they want to take a low profile. And I felt it difficult to do. So I, you know, that's my perspective on the hedge fund industry or what I'm doing.
Well, Ray Dalio is the founder of Bridgewater Associates and co-chief investment officer and co-chairman as well. Ray Dalio, thank you so much for joining us today.